The envelope arrived on Libby Jones' 25th birthday, transforming her ordinary life in an instant. Inside lay news that would shatter her carefully constructed world. She had inherited a mansion worth millions on one of London's most prestigious streets. The modest achievements she'd been proud of, her small St. Albans flat, recent pay rise, planned Barcelona holiday, suddenly seemed insignificant against this windfall that promised to rewrite her future. What the envelope didn't reveal was the dark history woven into the walls of 16 Cheyne Walk, the house where her birth parents, Henry and Martina Lamb, were found dead in an apparent suicide pact alongside an unidentified man. The house where baby Libby, then named Serenity, had been found alive in her crib while her teenage siblings mysteriously vanished. By stepping into her inheritance, Libby unwittingly opens the door to a past filled with cult-like control, manipulation, and violence. Have you ever wondered what secrets old houses keep? What whispers might linger in the spaces between floorboards or behind peeling wallpaper? For Libby Jones, the answer to these questions would force her to question everything she thought she knew about herself. It began innocuously, a folk rock band filming in the wealthy Lamb family's Chelsea townhouse. Bertie Dunlop Evers arrived looking out of place, yet Henry Lamb Sr., hungry for social recognition, welcomed the attention. He couldn't foresee this encounter would unravel his family's carefully constructed life. What started as a weekend visit transformed into permanent residency when Bertie returned with her partner, Justin, and their essential supplies. The situation worsened with the arrival of the Thompsons. David, a self-proclaimed physical therapist for Henry Sr. after his stroke, and Sally, who took over homeschooling the children. The invasion advanced systematically. Justin destroyed the English garden for herbs. David's equipment scarred the Persian carpet in the formal room. Most disturbingly, young Phineas Thompson cornered young Henry in the library and declared, "You know we're here to stay, don't you? Mother says this house needs us." Isn't it fascinating how boundaries can be crossed incrementally? How a home can be infiltrated through sophisticated manipulation, exploiting each family member's vulnerabilities? By May 1991, the Lamb household operated under tyrannical rules posted on the kitchen wall. No haircuts, television, or visitors. Only black, white, and gray clothing, mandatory veganism and organic food, and required daily exercise with David. The transformation from wealthy family to isolated cult was nearly complete. When 13-year-old Henry questioned their discontinued laundry service, his mother revealed the truth. His father's money was gone. They survived on selling stocks with just $30 weekly for expenses, an amount she once spent on flowers alone. She insisted they weren't poor, but unburdened and free. Under David's influence, family possessions vanished, supposedly donated to charity. Paintings disappeared from walls, valuable items vanished overnight, and children wore only black cotton tunics made by Bertie. The final blow came when David ordered everyone to surrender their shoes, claiming they represented capitalism's evils. From that day until their escape 2 years later, no one left the house. How easily can freedom be surrendered when taken away piece by piece, with each loss rationalized as spiritual progress rather than recognized as a tightening trap? After years of escalating abuse, the teenagers planned their escape, drug the adults with Henry's sleeping draft, gather necessities and money, take baby Serenity, and flee using David's key. They executed during Bertie's birthday party, with Henry secretly dosing the food. That night, they distracted the adults with fiddle music while Henry prepared the drugged meal. All adults quickly fell unconscious. In David and Bertie's room, they found hoarded luxury items despite their own deprivation. Unexpectedly, Bertie woke and lunged for Serenity in Lucy's arms. Henry struck her with what appeared to be an elephant tusk, killing her. Checking downstairs, he returned pale. Something's gone wrong. The others, they're all dead. The teenagers removed evidence, found nearly 7,000 pounds plus jewelry and valuables. They sank weighted bags containing cult-contradicting evidence in the Thames. Their plan unraveled when clemency slid. Henry then discovered Lucy and Finn's relationship and Finn's paternity of Serenity. After a confrontation, Lucy took the ill Finn to a doctor, leaving Serenity behind. By her release from medical care, authorities had found the bodies and taken Serenity away. What would you do if escaping abuse meant crossing moral boundaries? How far would you go to protect those you love? 25 years after the tragedy, three journeys converge. Libby Jones investigates her birth family with journalist Miller Rowe, whose obsession with the case destroyed his marriage. Meanwhile, Lucy, living in France under a false identity, receives a notification. The baby is 25. Desperate to return to England despite expired documents, she stabs her abusive ex-husband in self-defense before fleeing. Henry, having monitored the house while awaiting Libby's claim, has transformed himself through cosmetic procedures. Posing as Finn, he gains Libby's trust, even drugging her and Miller during their visit. The search deepens when Libby and Miller meet Clemency, Sally Thompson's daughter, who reveals the shocking truth. Lucy, not Martina, was Libby's biological mother, impregnated at 14 by David Thompson. As the storylines converge at the Chelsea house, Lucy and Henry await Libby's arrival. The emotional reunion brings Lucy face to face with the daughter she never abandoned but lost through circumstances beyond her control. Lucy introduces Libby to her half-siblings, Marco and Stella, as the baby I had when I was very young, while the children embrace and Lucy watches tearfully. Don't we all search for the missing pieces of our identity, for the truth about where we come from? A year after their reunion, the survivors have forged new paths. Lucy lives in Henry's flat with Marco and Stella, pursuing her violin career. The Chelsea house has been sold, and with Michael's murder unsolved, Lucy moves forward, financially secure from her share of the sale. For Libby's birthday, her newfound family gathers. Despite their small age gap, she and Lucy have grown close. Henry remains an enigma to Libby. She can't forget Clemency's warning about his streak of pure evil or his horrific acts, yet understands how trauma shaped him. The celebration shifts when Miller arrives with news. He's found Finn, working as a safari guide in Botswana as Finn Thompson. The brochure shows a sunburnished blonde man who looks remarkably like Libby. Lucy tearfully confirms, "Yes, that's him. That's Finn. He's alive." Even in this moment, Henry's internal monologue reveals his continuing obsession with Finn. When visiting Finn is discussed, Henry puts on his best jolly Uncle Henry smile and asks, "Room for one more?" Each character grapples with identity from origins versus personal creation. Libby reconciles her dual identities. Lucy has reinvented herself multiple times. Henry obsessively seeks to become Finn, and Finn chose complete reinvention. Our inheritances influence but don't determine who we become. Sometimes the heaviest inheritance isn't property or money, but the stories we tell ourselves about who we are.